Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 462. In this episode, Scott talks with Paul Betts, formerly of GitHub, about building cross-platform desktop apps with Atom Shell.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I am talking with Paul Betts, formerly of GitHub, now currently working at Slack. How are you, sir?
Doing great, doing great.
Slack is like the product that won't quit. It is really hot right now.
Yeah, we're really excited. It's going, everything's going really well. So,
what does Slack do for the one person that doesn't know?
So Slack is communications tool for your business. It's for small offices, large offices, and you can kind of think of it as kind of a modern version of IRC. So it's you have rooms that exist for a long time. It's not like a Skype where you kind of pull a bunch of people in and then, you know, you delete that chat and it's gone forever. So we bring together your documents. We bring together people talking about stuff. We have really great search so you can find things that people talked about in the past. And we bring together all your other services too. So you integrate, like if you're in a software project, you integrate your GitHub and maybe CI build and they show up in chat too. And so it's a great way to work together and see what's going on.
Cool. So the thing about Slack is that it integrates itself into your life so much that you have to have it everywhere. And, you know, I've got it on my iPhone and on my iPad. But on Windows, I end up using a browser, basically. And people have been asking, I've been hearing myself a lot, that people want a Windows application. So you guys are writing a Windows app for Slack now, right?
Yeah. So right now we have a Mac app and a iOS and Android, and right now we're working on both a Windows desktop app and a Windows Phone 8.1 app.
Okay. So Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows.
Yeah. So there's two separate applications.
Mm-hmm. And what technology are you using to write those applications?
So the Windows Phone application is a pretty standard Calibre micro application, uses, it's a universal application, but for initial release it'll be phone only. But the desktop application that I work on is built using Atom Shell, which is this technology that is the host of the text editor Atom from GitHub.
So Atom Shell. So Atom is like it looks like Sublime text editor, like you said. It's the editor from GitHub, and it's all open source.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And inside that, is it just a window frame and a browser, or is that oversimplifying things?
So Atom Shell is basically they took Chrome the browser, specifically this module that's fairly new to Chrome called the Chromium Content Module.
Hmm.
And so they split kind of like the contents of every tab is split into its own library that you can interact with. You can do all kinds of stuff. So they took that and took the V8 run loop, like, you know, JavaScript's the V8, the JavaScript engine from Chrome, and integrated it with Node.js. And so the effect of that is that you can open the dev tools in Atom or any Atom Shell app and type like requirefs. Like, and now you can do file system operations or anything that you can do in Node.js, you can do in Chrome now in Atom Shell.
So let me see how I can understand this. So I know that I can write Node applications at the command line. I know that, like, the Azure cross-platform SDK, when I type node.exe, that is a Node app. And I can use require.js against the file system there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is bringing that into the GUI world.
Yep, exactly. So you get not only do you get Node.js, you have the DOM, and you have CSS, and you have HTML, and you can do whatever you want with that. So basically how it works is that when you start an Atom shell app, you're effectively in a Node.js run loop. There's no Windows, there's no anything, and one of the things you can do is create a new browser window class. And so that opens the DOM, it opens HTML and CSS, and give it an initial page to load. And then you can create as many windows as you want, of course. And then you're in a browser, and you're in a browser that can do special things, that can do things that a desktop app could.
Are you bringing a full version of Chrome or a mostly full version of Chrome down and making it private to me? So making the Scott Atom shell application, I now have to be responsible for updating this Chrome browser if there's a security problem?
Well, so ideally the content that you're running in this Atom shell app is content that you control and usually is local. So a lot of the security issues around that you'd be worried about normally, you're not so worried about because you're only loading content that you wrote yourself. You're not loading content over the web in a very general way. Atom shell provides a way to put a sandbox around web content so you can load arbitrary content like third-party embeds and stuff like that. That's safe, so you don't have to worry about people breaking out of it. But yeah, so you're maintaining a version of Chrome that you can update on and whenever you want. So if you find security updates, you should probably send them down to your customers if you like them.
And like you said, though, it's not really Chrome. It's Chromium, the open source project, not Chrome, the Google browser.
Exactly. So the difference is that Google Chrome has a bunch of Google services built in. So like when you use the voice dictation, it sends it to Google servers. So Chromium doesn't have that because you don't have a token for Google services.
Mm-hmm. And how is this different from Node WebKit?
They're really similar. The biggest difference is that Node WebKit, it's more of an approach and implementation than anything. Node WebKit directly hacks on Chrome. Like they have cloned Chromium and they're changing a whole bunch of stuff in the browser, in the actual code of Chromium. Which means that it's easier for them to implement certain features, but also means that it's very hard for them to keep up with Chrome. So they used to be like six versions behind on Chromium, mm-hmm. and they've recently upgraded. Atom does it its approach is more, is less hands-off, it's more hands-off to Chromium itself. So they don't have to patch Chrome that much. And that has advantages and disadvantages.
Now, Node WebKit, I guess, was renamed to NWJS, and this comes out of Intel. And they're following Chrome and Chromium, and I think they're on Chromium 38 or something now. How would someone who's listening make a decision between Atom Shell and something like NWJS?
I think they're both good choices. I think you can think about, both of them are fairly well documented, they both have lists of the features they support, and they mostly intersect, but not completely. So you can kind of look and research which one you want to use. I personally think that Atom Shell is a great choice. But
are you biased?
I'm very biased, but I think they're both good. Then, you're not making a mistake by choosing the wrong one.
Mm-hmm. Isn't this kind of weird though that we're bringing the web from a UI perspective into the desktop? And what's the point of an operating system at all? Isn't Atom Shell kind of justifying the whole concept of the Chromebook? Like, desktop OSs go away now, and it's all just a browser frame.
A little bit, but my path has always been native desktop applications. I've never been web anything. But the thing you have to realize is that the web is the most advanced rendering and layout engine in the world, and all the people who are doing the most interesting or advanced work in building a really fast, really capable, hardware-accelerated UI layout tool is all in HTML and CSS. It's crazy how easy you can do these hardware-accelerated, beautiful animations in CSS. Compared to, if I were to try to implement that in native code, it'd be, days and days and days and days. And I can do it in CSS in 5 minutes.
That's really interesting because things like, WPF has a very sophisticated compositing engine and they do a lot of cool graphic stuff. OS X is always including new, you know, Cocoa this and you know, Core that and Metal this to make 3D effects and transparencies and things possible. So there's still work happening in native code or in native or managed code that's not on the web. Like, I don't think the web has completely taken over the rendering engine market, but you're arguing that it largely has.
I wouldn't say that they're completely taken over, but I think that it's way easier. Like, the amount of, like, results to effort you get from the web is way more... you get more for the work you put in, basically.
Mm-hmm. And when I have this application now, I've got what kind of base footprint? I mean, is this 20 or 30 megs for Hello World? Because it includes a lot of... it includes Chromium, includes... The Chromium files. What's my size on disk?
Yeah, so that's one of the disadvantages is you get a pretty big app. Now, so we use in the Slack desktop application, we use Coro for Windows, which is an install technology that I wrote, and one of the features of it is Delta updates. So once people get it on the box, updates are often really small, like around 500K.
Hmm.
So instead of, they don't have to download this 60 MB update every single time you send it down.
So the auto updater, that's Squirrel, and that's yours?
Yep, yeah.
And is that like kind of like click once? It's a better click once, and it's also cross-platform?
It's a better click once. It's a click once that's more controllable. You can. It's just a library. You can do whatever you want with it. Mm-hmm. You can do things like, I want to test updates, so I'll point my update server to just a folder on my computer, and then I can run the updates and see what happens. It's way more flexible than click once.
So, and the auto updater is something, is that implemented for Windows too?
Yeah. So the auto updater is a C-sharp, actually a bunch of C-sharp code basically.
Oh, okay. So when you went to Slack, you guys had to make a decision, like, or what are we going to do? We're going to make this Windows application. We want it to have the best experience ever. Was there something about the Slack application or the Slack way of thinking that said it's obvious to do this with web technology?
Yeah, so I think that the Mac app that previously already existed already had used this approach, and so we kind of wanted to go to something similar. And so we had a few other options on how to do that. We could build our own kind of like web frame and write the code in C++, the hosting code in C++. We could write it, in C# with WPF using something like Ceph#, which is a C# component to embed Chromium into a WPF window. But this one ended up being like the easiest one, and it's worked out pretty well. So,
do you think that if a company has a whole lot of web technology already, if they're already deep into Node, that just makes AtomShell even more of a slam dunk?
Yeah, I think it makes it really easy, especially because it's great to share with other people on your team who are more used to web technology because they can just open up DevTools and hack around. It's very familiar. They don't have to learn anything, this completely new stack, this new technology, this new thing. I can send the Slack app to designers on my team, and they just open it up and start messing with CSS, and it's cool.
So what's that like? So you said DevTools. I assume that means Chrome DevTools, F12 tools. You zip this up and you send it to me. I'm a designer. I just open up that folder in Sublime or my text editor of choice. And do I just somehow hit refresh on the actual native Windows app and it reloads what I'm doing?
We've got one even better, actually. So we have this in our dev mode. We have a tool that will actually, it's a script you want to run called script/run. And what it does is that it enables live reload in our desktop app. So they'll be editing, they hit save, the app automatically knows, restarts it, and so your iteration loop for doing work on AtomShell apps is really, really short, which is really great.
Wow, okay. So to put this in the context, though, because I know I keep pushing on the it's Chrome and a shell, though, it's the full, you have full support on the native platform you're on. So if I want to do Windows-specific stuff, I can still do that, right?
Yeah, so one of the cool things about using AtomShell is that you can pull in Node.js modules, like any NPM module, including ones that have native code. So NPM modules are usually written in JavaScript. Sometimes they can be written in C++. And that C++ code can do whatever any other C++ code could do. And so including those modules are, and there's a bunch of useful modules that have already been built for Atom Shell. Mm-hmm. So you can, like, for example, we use one that pulls in the native spell checker in the OS. So, like, you can integrate that module, and from your perspective, it's just JavaScript, but it's written in C++, and they've done a bunch of stuff to bind native code. And so connecting your own native code is a little bit of work, but can be definitely done, and it's not too hard.
Hey, this is Scott. You know I like a good community edition. The best things in life are free, and the community license from our sponsor, SyncFusion, will give individual and small business developers access to more than 650 components across 12 platforms, and that includes WPF and Windows Forms, JavaScript, Xamarin, Lightswitch. You can check it all out at syncfusion.com/Hanselman to claim your free license. You know, that's really interesting because I could see doing this the wrong way would be, you know, when I right-click, I get a menu that doesn't quite look native and is a re-implementation of a spell checker when I've got a perfectly good one sitting right here already. It's kind of what we did in Java. I spent a lot of time working in Java in the mid-90s, late-90s, and we were constantly trying to make it look native because it was simply not possible to make it look native. You know, it was like, you know, that right-click menu doesn't look right. Well, it's because it's a fake right-click menu. We drew that. Yeah, that's a lie. You're basically saying use web stuff for what the web stuff is good at, and then use native stuff for what the native stuff is good at.
Yeah, exactly. Or being able to pull in like kind of platformy APIs as well, like kind of backend things that you'd want to do on desktop applications, like putting elements in the notification tray. Like you can put things in there, and that's using C++ code, stuff like that.
And balloon toast notifications on Windows, but grunt on Mac.
Exactly, yeah.
Is it grunt? Is that what the notification system's called?
I think it was called growl.
Growl, pardon me. See, grunt, gulp, gulp, growl, growl.
Nobody can keep track.
I can. Who knows? One thing, though, that I noticed, though, is that native node modules are supported, but why is Atom Shell using a different version of V8, the JavaScript engine, than official node?
So Atom Shell always uses the V8 that is bundled with Chrome, which means that the version of Node you run in Atom Shell is a little bit weird. It's patched a little bit to make it compatible with the version of V8. The version of V8 that Node.js proper uses is pretty out of date, actually. And so
really?
the fork of Node.js, io.js, is trying to fix that and come up to the latest official versions of V8.
Is that why that happened?
Yep. Well, one of the reasons. It's complicated. TM.
It is complicated, but that's interesting, though. So you're saying that the relationship, not the interpersonal relationship, but the technical relationship between Chrome, the browser, and V8, the JavaScript virtual machine, is architected in such a way that it's not optimal, and some people feel strongly about that way.
Yeah. And then, I mean, for the applications that Node uses, it's not super important to keep it, you know, the very, very latest version.
Sure.
In future versions, Atom Shell is actually switching to IO.js, which means that they'll both of these projects will track the latest V8, public V8 version.
We should probably have a whole other podcast on that because that's very interesting. By making that decision, it cements IO.js as a thing that will be around for a while. But it also makes a very strong technical declaration of we think it should be done this way.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a little bit more just to keep up with the latest stuff. Mm-hmm.
Would want the latest stuff. If you have an auto-updating, high-tech Windows desktop app, you want it to be using whatever the best thing that's available is.
Yeah, exactly.
So the reason that I brought that up, though, is that Atom Shell uses a different V8 version is that there's a thing called APM rather than NPM. Can you explain that?
Sure. So APM is for Atom the text editor, and APM is a way to install your text editor plugins. It's a little bit different from NPM because they use a different registry, because it wouldn't make sense to put like my cool Atom UI theme in the NPM registry. You know,
that makes sense.
And it also does something that is a little bit like obscure, but so when you build NPM modules, it's built against your system Node.js, mm-hmm. and we need to rebuild it against Atom Shell's Node.js. And APM handles that, but actually in newer versions of Atom Shell, we want to get away from APM, you having to use APM for anything. APM should just be for Atom, the text editor.
Yeah, when I saw that, it was like, gosh, I felt like I was being taken farther and farther away from the ecosystem that has the most support. You know, like when there's a parallel package manager and a parallel version of V8 and a parallel this, it makes me wonder, like, gosh, if I'm going to bet my company on something like Atom Shell, or at least, you know, bet my app on it, all of these different interdependent pieces and another package manager, are those things that I want to have to worry about? Because they could go away someday.
Yeah. So Atom Shell, the desktop technology, doesn't use APM's package registry at all. It uses NPM, just like everyone else in Node.js world. The only thing, it uses one command to rebuild. It used to. Now it doesn't.
Okay. So Atom Shell doesn't use APM for native node modules.
Yeah. It now will use its own build process. And in fact, one of the projects that I work on that I kind of, when I started this, Atom Shell wasn't particularly suited for building things that weren't Atom the text editor. And so I took the Atom source code and forked it and retooled it a little bit so that it makes it way easier to start your own projects that are kind of production quality, in the sense that, like, it does all the build stuff for you. It, like, will set a nice icon. It'll set the, like, you know, on an executable, you got to set the, you know, file version info and stuff like that. And I call this project, it's Atom/Atom Shell Starter. Mm-hmm. So it's like a starting project to get people going really quickly with Atom Shell.
But is that something, is that a Paul Betts production, or is that an Atom production?
It's on the Atom repo. I'm the one who did it. We have a bunch of contributors. The Atom team is really excited to see that be successful. So they've been sending PRs to it as well. The reason I brought it up, going back, is that it handles all this rebuilding native module stuff for you. Like, you don't have to think about it. Like, it just does it. Yeah. So you just say npm install my cool module, and you run the build, and then everything's done for you.
Okay, good. Now, you said that it is a fork.
I took all the build stuff from Atom the text editor and kind of like cleaned it up.
Oh, I see. So you kind of combined two things.
Yeah. So you don't have to. You can rename the app and set, you know, your own names and stuff like that. And it doesn't hard code the word Atom everywhere, basically.
So Atom Shell Starter is the file new project. It's the place to start from.
Basically.
Yeah. And really, people absolutely should start from here, would you say? There's no reason not to.
Yeah. Especially because it has that script run that makes it really easy to like run the app, iterate, make a change, run the app, make a change.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I'm on a Windows application, I think about the background threads and the threads that don't have a UI relationship, and then I think about the threads that are in the UI, and I always have to think about jumping between those contexts. Does Atom Shell have a similar concept?
Yeah, so every window has its own, just like Atom, or Chrome rather, has multiple processes. Atom Shell has multiple processes. So your app will start off with the browser process. They have very confusing names. So the initial Node.js run loop that you start off with is called the browser process.
So the thing that is not a browser is the browser context.
Exactly. The thing that doesn't have a DOM is called the browser process. It makes total sense. And so every window that you create will have its own process, and that's called a renderer process. And so the browser process is something you want to do as little as possible in, basically. Like, you just want to immediately open a window, because you don't have Chrome DevTools in the browser process. You just have a Node.js run loop that it's much more tricky to debug. So you don't want to do much there. You basically just want to open a browser window immediately where you can actually do stuff. And so you have the renderer process, which is your Chrome, you've got the DOM, you've got DevTools, you've got all the stuff.
Okay, so then that means that your code should probably be in the rendering context, what I would think of as the browser.
Yeah, exactly. And so there are tools, there are a bunch of APIs to talk between them.
Mm-hmm.
So certain APIs are only available in the browser process.
What's an example? Why would I ever want to be there? It sounds like you're saying I should never go there.
So an example is, let me think about that.
It's like, what's something that I would just, I can't, you know, like,
well,
like
creating other windows is in the browser process.
Okay. So it's almost like your main, like, yeah. I mean, it's the place you use to just jump off. You're not going to spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. What are some great applications that have been written in, Atom Shell?
There is a group of, what are they called? Mapbox? Mapbox is writing their main desktop application in, Atom Shell. They're a startup around, creating maps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're open source design and data, Mapbox.js, yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Who else? We're writing our, I think Slack's, when Slack releases their Windows application, we will be the biggest Atom Shell application, even bigger than Atom.
Really? So this is really kind of a burgeoning thing. This isn't something, for people who are listening, this isn't something that necessarily snuck up on them and they've never heard of it and it's taken over the world, but this is the beginning of something that could potentially be very big.
Yeah, it has a lot of potential. I'm really excited about it.
Is there a Slack Mac app and Linux app, or are you making all three?
The Mac app, we already have a Mac app that was previously written using different technology.
Mm-hmm.
We actually build the Slack Windows app on all three platforms.
In case?
Yeah, well, you know, like in Contact when they have the second time machine, just in case, you know, they find it in Japan. It's kind of the same thing.
Very nice reference there for those of you who did not see the movie Contact.
Well, you know, it's
a big spoiler alert here now, 10 years later. Yeah. For those of you who were not around in the early 2000s watching that Jodie Foster movie, there is a second time machine, so be aware.
Yep. Spoiler alert. Because the Mac app for us is because we have to do a bunch of other Mac stuff in the company, it's way easier to develop on Mac for us just because we don't have to boot into a VM and stuff. So we develop our Windows app on Mac, and we also have the Windows app that runs on Mac. And it also runs on Linux, too.
But you must have some native module stuff. So is there something that you're doing that works only on Windows because that's your target?
We have a very few ifdefs, like around the notification tray. Like, we just don't show it if it's on non-Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Or our updating framework is different on different platforms. So on Mac, we'll use the built-in auto-updater, and on Windows, we'll use Squirrel for Windows. So we have to do a few ifdefs, but very few, actually. A lot of things are handled for us, which is really nice.
Now, when I do testing of web apps, I've always been a fan of Selenium and using WebDriver. Can I use something like Selenium to test an Atom Shell app?
Yeah, definitely. So we have unit tests that we use Jasmine and a script that will just launch the app in a special mode. So it'll just know that it's in test mode, and it'll launch a window and run all the specs, and then immediately quit. And since you have control of the browser itself and like the entire app, you can just make it say like, oh, I have test mode, and like I'll just launch the app and run all the tests and stuff like that and exit. And so you can use all kinds of web testing technologies. We picked Jasmine because it was kind of Adam, the text editor, picked Jasmine, and it works really well for us. So.
Mm-hmm. What does the app do if I'm in airplane mode, if I'm on an airplane? Because, you know, Slack is a service in the cloud, but at the same time, it's an offline app. It should do something offline.
Right now, it does. It just tells you you're offline, which is unfortunate.
What do you think it should do, and what would an Atom Shell app do if it's offline? I mean, Atom, the editor, works fine offline.
Yeah, so most Atom Shell apps are not going to be a frame for web content.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of a unique Atom Shell app. Your Atom Shell app that you would write would definitely work offline and would just do all the same things that Atom the text editor would, like in terms of like offline support and stuff.
So to make sure I put something in the context, let's say that I want to write an application that's going to work offline. It'll be written in Atom Shell, and it's going to be like a poll taker, right? I'm sitting there with my tablet, and I'm going to have a form, and I'm going to hit submit.
Mm-hmm.
When I hit submit in this web Atom Shell application, I'm not on the internet. Where would the data go? Does it get post it back to a little listener, or am I catching it in the client side and putting it in a database? How does that work? Is this an entirely client-side world?
It's an entire client-side world. So you could handle that error and stuff into local storage. So mm-hmm. you get all the web local storage technologies. Atom Shell actually removes all the limits on them. So you're not limited to like 5 MB of data on local storage like you normally are. Mm. Or you can do things. What's really exciting is in Chrome 40, which is the one that just got released last night, actually, in Atom Shell, mm-hmm. You have service workers. And so service workers are this really interesting technology that's coming up in Chrome that basically allows you to override how the browser handles network requests. Mm-hmm. And so you can say, like, oh, if this failed, like this network request failed, then please give it this other content instead. Like, forget about it and give me this other thing. Or you can say, like, oh, I would like to, for this request, I want to do the caching and have custom behavior.
Oh, okay. So I can go and say, you know, grab this if you can, but if not, I'll be handling it this way.
Exactly.
Is this the Fetch API?
Yeah, exactly. It's the Fetch API.
Interesting. Okay. And theoretically, this could add a whole level of sophistication to web applications that want to take advantage of it, and also the cache API, because it puts you in programmatic control of exactly what's getting shoved into the DOM eventually.
Exactly. And in Atom Shell, it's especially interesting because in normal Chrome, that cache and fetch context is pretty limited. You can access, you know, a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. But in Atom Shell, you can access anything you want. You're a desktop app.
And Service Workers is pretty new. This is November of last year that the W3C did a working draft on that. So it is a standard, though, so it should happen everywhere eventually.
Yep.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much. Folks can check this out at github.com/atom/atom-shell, right?
Yep. Atom Shell is the project for the source code, and atom-shell-starter is the kind of starting project that I wrote.
And then what's the other project that you're known for that we had you on the show a number of years for?
I've written a lot of projects, C# projects. My biggest one is this project called Reactive UI. Mm-hmm. And so that is a MVVM framework that integrates the Reactive extensions for .NET.
Yep, and you can check that out at reactiveui.net. You've got a shiny new website for that.
Yeah, that was contributed by an external contributor. You did a great job.
It's a really lovely thing, and you continue to do great things for the community, Paul, and we appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.